Record, spotlight, gallery view. You have to change it at your end too. Go to gallery view. And
Mute. Bless you.
Gesundheit.
thank you. I'm assuming that was a visual sneeze and not an audible one.
Was
It was an audible or visual?
visual.
Visual. I was going to say, I caught the mute on that one fast enough. That was a.
Yay, mute buttons.
There you go. Yay for mute. Otherwise, you do not want to know what that would sound like. All right. Let's go to this.
I'll never tell.
Well, I'm going to let you control the mute for change. We'll see how that works.
Oh. Okay.
We'll see how that works. Helene, is that you? See, your name came up. Hopefully. All right, I'm going to keep you all on my second screen while I go to share screen so you can keep your cameras on. I get to see you during the share. Otherwise, I get to see your name and I don't get to see you. And that is always.
Coming right back.
No problem. We'll wait for you. Well, we're starting, but we'll catch you when you come back.
Really?
There you go. Okay. All right. Helene, I see you're are you there?
I'm here.
Excellent. Welcome.
Thank you. Finally.
And I had some issues with the Zoom link. I'm not sure what the issue was, but it's the same link every single week.
I
So
know, but I'm not the same.
if you can find a way to bookmark it or just I mean, I'll send out the emails every week, but just to keep it that way,
Going.
don't, yeah. But it's the same every week. It's not a different link. Not a different link every
Okay.
week. So,
Okay.
until such time as something happens to it, we're just going to keep it going, and then we'll change it if we need to. Okay, we're jumping in. We are here in Shmuel Bet Perek Chaf. We had kind of digressed into a little bit of a different issue or a connected issue, which is sort of the end of the story of Yoav last week, and we're going to pick up from there. But I need to put us all back on the same page. If you remember, we got into a whole discussion about the Mizbeach and Yoav and being taken off the Mizbeach to right? That was the whole discussion. Remember, I kept asking you who B'nai Ben Yehoyada was. Right, so that was all last week. So I'm going to keep the line open. You can keep yourselves unmuted or muted, whatever you feel comfortable, as long as there's no background noise. Kind of just chime in. Let's see if that works better. But in the meantime, we're going to go back to the story of just to put us on the same page. Go back to the story of Amasa ben Yeter, who comes out from Gibeon to greet Yoav and Avishai. And he says, and Yoav says to him, "Hashalom atachi," and is it well with you? V'tochaz yad yamin Yoav izkan amasa linshok lo. Yoav took amasa by the beard with his right hand to give him a kiss, and with his left hand, amasa was not paying attention, and lo nishmar me'acherev asher biyad Yoav, and so he Yoav smote him in the stomach or in the groin, ve'yakeo be'al ha'chomesh. And the rest of it is what we would say, didn't have to hit him twice. So that is the, hang on a second, I just need to do one thing. Just need to turn on Do Not Disturb, otherwise, I get. Messages. Okay. And so that was sort of the moment where Yoav and we had talked about the parallel between Yoav killing Amasa ben Yeter and the various reasons for it. We went into a lengthy discussion parallel to the story of Yoav killing Avner ben Ner, also a general of David's that D David had reached out to, wanted to make peace with, and Yoav didn't agree, and that was sort of back in Perek Gimel. So we have this sort of two anchor points in Yoav's life where he kills a supposed threat to the throne or threat to his position or somebody who's in his mind is disloyal to him. Unclear whether that's objectively the case. We talked about Amasa and the complexity around whether or not Amasa was disloyal to him, had got caught up in the rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri and therefore was in fact disloyal, or whether he was just delayed because he couldn't organize Shevet Yehudah, or maybe he didn't believe in the battle because, as we said, he was sitting in Givon, which is the area of the Mishkan. All of those possible, but in the meantime, Yoav kills him. Where we took this was back into the world of Sefer Melachim, in which David, on his deathbed, gives Shlomo HaMelech a number of instructions, and one of them is to address unfinished business with Yoav. וגם אתה ידעת את אשר עשה לי יואב בן צרויה, אשר עשה לי שני שרי צבאות ישראל. You know what Yoav ben Tzruya did when he killed two commanders, captains, heads of the army of Israel. Avner ben Ner ulamasa ben Yeter. Avner ben Ner, who was the general for Ishbosheth and Shaul. Amasa ben Yeter, who was the general that David had put in charge after the battle with Avshalom. And Yoav Yehargem killed them, and instead killed them in cold blood. Again, b'yasam dvei mechama b'shalom. And therefore, he instructs Shlomo, v'asita kachachmatecha v'lo tevet sevato b'shalom shol. Do according to your wisdom, do not let him go down to the grave in the peace. And so, we read the story, right? We talked about the fact that he runs to the Mizbeach and he grabs hold of the Mizbeach and Yoav has to have him killed there. I'm going to read those psukim again, but where we had left off was the question of where he got this notion from that he could run to the Mizbeach. Right? What does the Mizbeach have to do with anything per se? And I think that's where we left off. I need to go a little bit backwards, because why does Shlomo want to kill Yoav suddenly? What's going on here? So to understand this, let's go back one parak. I'm not sure if we did this last week or not, I don't recall, but we're going to go back one chapter. Let's go back to the story of Adoniel. To really understand the issue with Yoav, we really have to go back to the story of Adoniel. So let's go back to Melachim Aleph, Perak Aleph. David at the end of his life. There is this kind of small introduction to the chapter which has to do with Avishag Shunamit. Avishag was brought into the palace to be a kind of to warm the king, which of course was somebody's idea, it wasn't David's idea. And David and the Torah is very, the Navi is very clear, Amelech lo yada, the king did not touch her. Right? This was somebody's thought that to address the king's needs at the end of his life, they're going to bring him another Bathsheba. David was not going to get caught into that world. And so he does not do so. So Avishag HaShunamit is in the palace like she's in the palace like one of the help, one of the servants in the king's in the palace. They had brought her as a sochenet, as a companion for him. He certainly did not see her in that fashion. That's just by way of parentheses, close parentheses, Avishag HaShunamit is there. What role she plays, we'll see in a moment. In the meantime, Adoniyahu ben Chagit mitnase lemor ani emloch. Adoniyahu ben Chagit, after, as David is dying, third rebellion in David's life. I'm just going to put background noise. I'm going to put on mute. Adoniyahu ben Chagit mitnase lemor ani emloch. So Adoniyahu says, I'm going to be the king. And v'yaz lovechav v'farashim v'chamishim v'shvatzim lefanav, and he organizes chariots and horsemen, 50 men to run before him, just like Avshalom did before him. Some similar type of approach. And in fact, the Navi tells us that he was also very handsome, just like Avshalom. He was next in line after Avshalom, and therefore he really thought that he was in line for the throne. He would have been in line for the throne if it wasn't for... He would have been in line for the throne if it wasn't for... Finish the sentence.
Shlomo.
Right? If it wasn't for the fact that David promised the throne to Shlomo, son of Bathsheba, and that was intentional as a promise to Bathsheba. In the meantime, the real question is who sided with Adoniel? And suddenly we see Vayudvarav im Yoav ben Tsruya im Evyatar HaKohen. In order to launch a rebellion, you need support. And the support here came from two very significant places. Evyatar was one of the two Kohanim. Remember, David had two Kohanim who were with him the whole time, Evyatar and Tzadok. Evyatar sided with Adoniel. And so did none other than our friend, Yoav ben Tsruya, sided with Adoniel in his rebellion against Shlomo. Ve'azru achrei Adoniel. Whereas Tzadok HaKohen and Bneyahu ben Yoyada was the general in charge of the Kretium Pleiti, and Natan HaNavi, and Shimi and Re'i, and the Giborim, and all of the warriors, right, David's inner circle, they were not with the Adoniel, they stayed with David and Shlomo. So the story really begins with this moment in which Yoav, for the first time in his career, decides to break from David's line and support Evyatar for the throne instead of Shlomo. I understand that Yoav certainly saw Bathsheba as a stain on David's record. He certainly saw all the consequences of what happened to David after Bathsheba, everything that they've been through since the rebellion, since Amnon and Tamar and the rebellion of Avshalom is because of Bathsheba. To reward that entire part of David's life with the throne going to Shlomo, that nobody understood that except David and Bathsheba and Natan HaNavi. And so Yoav says enough, and he goes and he sides with Adoniel. Okay. The end of the parak we read every year is the Haftorah of Parshat Vayechi. I'm not going to go through it again. But the bottom line of it is that at the end of the story, the rebellion of Adoniel is put down, is stopped. It stops before it even becomes a rebellion, because essentially David, in his lifetime, anoints Shlomo as his heir. Right? Once David publicly anoints Shlomo as his heir, everybody goes and sides with Shlomo, and more or less this rebellion ends. I'm going to skip to the end of the parak. They go and they anoint Shlomo, and Pasuk Mem Aleph, Vayishma Adoniyahu, V'chol HaKru'im Asher Ito. When Adoniyahu and all the guests who were with him heard, Vayishmat Kol HaShofar, and they heard the shofar blowing, and they heard the tumult about David anointing Shlomo, HaMelech Tavidim Lichet Shlomo, and so at that more or less ends his rebellion, and so everybody goes home, and Adoniyahu's claim to the throne ends. Everybody left and they all ran away. Adoniyahu was frightened. Why was Adoniyahu afraid? What was he afraid of?
Retribution from Shlomo.
I mean, the last person to launch a rebellion for the throne didn't end well. Not for him and not for the rest of the Jewish people. And then Adoniyahu was afraid that the rebellion is over. His supporters have all dissipated. Everybody's gone home. He's alone by himself. And he's afraid that Shlomo's going to kill him. Treason. Treason is a capital offense. Vayakom vayelech vayachazek bekarnot hamizbeach. So what does he do? He runs to the Mishkan and he grabs the horns of the altar. He grabs the corners, the tops, crowns, corner of the altar. I've always had a theory that the word corner and the word Karen come from the same etymology, but I have no proof to that. And then Yao runs to the Mizbeach. Now, why to the Mizbeach? So this is really where the mystery begins. What is it about the Mizbeach that is so that he runs to the Mizbeach? And not only that, Vayugad l'Shlomo lemor, inei Adonai Yahu yareh et ha-melech Shlomo, v'inei achaz bekarnot ha-mizbeach. The next pasuk, Shlomo is told that Adonai Yahu was afraid. And so he's clinging to the Mizbeach for life. Lemor, he's saying, Yishava l'kayom ha-melech Shlomo, yamit davdo b'charev. I want the king to swear that he will not kill me. If he shows himself to be worthy, he will not a hair of his shall fall to the earth, meaning, but if he is found to be wicked, then he shall die, meaning, I will give him a chance to prove himself. If he stays loyal, he's fine. I promise I won't hurt him. If he continues in this rebellion, then I will have him killed. So Shlomo sent, and they brought him, they took him down from the altar. He comes, he prostrates himself before the king. Go to your house, go and be a good boy, and do not rebel. What's with the Mizbeach? And we'll see Yoav in the Mizbeach in a moment too, but what's with the Mizbeach? So to understand the context, we need to understand what the role of the Mizbeach is playing here. And it's very specific and a very unique role. It almost is the same kind of role you would expect of some kind of asylum or extraterritorial space where the king has no jurisdiction, right? The king can't go into the Mishkan, he can't go into the Mikdash. If you want to claim asylum, if you want to escape the king's jurisdiction, you run into the temple sanctuary. There is such a concept generally in the world of politics, and so the way nations operate, that is true. But there's an additional element to the Mizbeach. And I think we touched on it last week a little bit. The additional element to the Mizbeach is that the Mizbeach functions like a what?
Irmiklat.
Right, Irmiklat. This Mizbeach functions exactly as a city of refuge would function, an Irmiklat. The Rambam writes this based on a pasuk in Shemot. Actually, I'll show you the pasuk in Shemot first. Pasuk in Shemot is in Shemot Perek of Aleph, which is Parshat Mishpatim. Make ish v'met mot yumat. If a person kills somebody else, meaning premeditatedly, intentionally, the act of murder is an act punishable by death. It's a capital offense, as we call it, yumat. Whereas, if it wasn't premeditated, but something which God caused to happen, meaning it was an accident, then we call that accidental death, we call that manslaughter, we call that negligence causing death. There are all kinds of different terms for not premeditated murder, right? In modern legal terms, there are different levels. In halacha, also, there are different levels. Purely accidental death, right? You have no control and it's completely out of your hands, does not have to go to a near miklat. Halachically, you have to have some element of negligence before you are obligated to run to exile into a city of refuge. Nonetheless, I will give you a place to which you can flee. I will set you a place. What will that place be? It doesn't stipulate here. Whether it's a city, whether it's a location, whether it's a region, whether it's some, all it says is, I will give you such a place. But if a person schemes against his fellow and kills him with guile or cunning, meaning we go back to premeditated, the phrase is, right? We come back to the phrase v'chi yazid, right? Mezid, intentional, right? The opposite of mezid in halachic terms is called shgaga. Shgaga means accidental or some kind of negligence involved, but nonetheless non-intentional. Then me'imiz b'chiti k'chein lamut. Then even from my altar, you can take him to be killed. Meaning, if it's intentional, then he can't run to the emiklat. Then you have to punish him. There is a capital offense. And notice the reference to the place where you can run to, and the reference to the mizbeach in the same context. I will give you a place to run to. If it's mezid, you can't run to that place. And even from the mizbeach, you have to take him to be killed, meaning the Mizbeach seems to be used here in this context as one of those places that is a option for the Miklat of somebody who kills accidentally. You follow that reasoning? The Mizbeach here is in parallel to the place I will give you from which to flee for protection. And that's how it's recorded in halachic terms. If you take a look at the Rambam, which I've given you here on this page, I didn't send the source page out because most of it's text from Chumash. I'll show you the, but just this one source. The Rambam writes in Hilchot Rotzeach that just it's dealing with all this, the laws of an ir miklat, and the word miklat means refuge, somewhere to escape to. Hamizbeach kolet, that just as a city of refuge, a city can be taken as a place to escape to, so too the Mizbeach, which is considered extraterritorial, which is considered outside of the domain of the king, you can escape there, Mizbeach kolet. As it says, with regard to somebody who kills intentionally, the opposite, you can take him off the Mizbeach to execute him, meaning that if he's a shoreg bishgaga, if he kills accidentally and therefore can run to a near miklat, he's just as he can escape to a near miklat, he can also escape to the mizbeach. Why would you do so? We'll see in a minute what that's all about. If somebody kills accidentally and he runs to the mizbeach, and the goel adam, the redeemer, the avenger of blood there, right, the person who's running, the relative is running after him to kill him, catches him there and kills him, then he's guilty of a crime for which he himself is guilty of a capital offense. So the Ir Miklat, the concept of a city of refuge, and the Mizbeach function in this context in exactly the same way. So far, so good? Everybody understand that context? All right. So to understand what's going on and why I have a special status to the Mizbeach, we need to do a little bit of background onto what the concept of an Ir Miklat is. Okay? And this is all to understand. Actually, no, we didn't read the rest of the story in Malachim. Okay, we have to do that first. So we've got the concept of Mizbeach is Kolet. Adoniyahu, when he hears that Shlomo wants to kill him, what does he do? He runs to the Mizbeach. He can't run to an Ir Miklat, ostensibly. Maybe there is no Ir Miklat nearby. I'm not sure. For whatever reason, he runs to the Mizbeach instead of to the local closest Ir Miklat. There's probably reason for it historically, but I for now, he could have, for our purposes, he could have run to a Ir Miklat. Instead, he ran to the Mizbeach. All right. Mizbeach functions in this regard as a kind of refuge, a city of refuge, or a Ir Miklat. So he runs there. Shlomo takes him off the Mizbeach and says, go home, you're safe, unless you rebel again. Perek Aleph. Perek Bet, David is dying, and David gives an instruction to Shlomo regarding Yoav. We've seen that, right? We read that before. And then, after David's death, we're going to jump a little bit further down the story. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Oh, Yud. Vayishkav David im avatav vayikaver bi'ir David. David dies, he's buried, and now we are stage two in Machut Yisrael. We're in the reign of Shlomo HaMelech. Ushlomo yashav kiseh David aviv. Shlomo sat on David's throne. The moment David enters the throne, Adoniyahu shows up again. Vayavo Adoniyahu ben Chagit el Bat Sheva, em Shlomo. So Adoniyahu comes to Bat Sheva and has a whole conversation with Bat Sheva. Vatomer Adoniyahu says to Bat Sheva, Shalom Aleichem. She says, Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem Shalom. Come in peace, I've come in peace. Right, Shalom. Right, she says to him, if you come in peace, meaning you've come to kill me or you've come to have a shmuz with me. She goes, no, I've come for a cup of tea. Shalom. He says to her, I have a request of you. She says, speak, what is it your request? You know that the kingdom was really mine. It's a fascinating way to open up a conversation with Bat Sheva. You know that I should have been king. And really, they all, the people were with me to reign. But at the last minute, the kingdom went to my brother. Right? Suddenly, Shlomo is his brother. Right? Suddenly, he's going to recognize Bat Sheva. Fine, it was from God. But Nebuch, I'm sitting here. I was so done in, poorly done in by. I have just one request. One innocent request. Don't turn me down. What's the innocent request? Whoops. Oops, 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 oops. So she says, what is the innocent request? I would like to have the hand of Avishaga Shunamit in marriage. It's a fairly innocent request. Why is it a fairly innocent request? At least on the face of it, it's a fairly innocent request because...
like sleeping with his wife.
No.
I mean, not literally, but...
No, Avishagu Shunamit.
He wants the melucha.
Wait. What he wants is a different question. I didn't ask what he wants. I asked, why is it an innocent request? We'll get to what he wants. You're correct. But what he asked for seems to be an innocent request, and Bat Sheva sees it as an innocent request. Why is it an innocent request on the face of it? Because who was Avishaga Shunamit?
She was a servant in David's house.
Right, she was one of the house help. Remember, Ve'amelech lo yida'a. The Melech never saw her as a wife or a Pilegish of any kind. To the king, she was one of the help. And therefore, there was no status of Avishaga Shunamit in the eyes of the king. So for Avishaga Shunamit to be given to Adoniyahu as hand in marriage should be as innocent as, I found myself a bride. Mazel tov. Right? Except for one problem. How many people in the kingdom know that the king had no relations with her?
None.
I wouldn't say none.
Okay, I
venture to say probably three. They are Adoniyahu, who knew exactly what he was requesting, Bat Sheva. If anybody knew that the king had no relations with her, it would have been Bat Sheva. And most likely, Shlomo. Meaning, the inner circle understood the game that Adoniyahu was playing. And it's a game. Because in the eyes of the inner circle, Bat Sheva says, oh, it's an innocent request. Bat Sheva, no problem. I'll be happy to share the good news. You found yourself a bride. But in the eyes of the king, he understood exactly what Adoniyahu was doing. Because what Adoniyahu was doing was not about what was reality. It was about perception. What Avadiyahu was doing was he's saying, the perception will be that I have taken the king's pilegesh. The last time somebody took the king's pilegesh was Shalom, when he took the king's pilegesh and declared himself king on the rooftops of the palace. That's exactly what Adoniyahu was playing at. And his request to Bathsheba is innocent because Bathsheba knew that Avishag HaShunamit was not anything more than one of the help, but nobody else did. Vatomer Bathsheba tov, vatavo Bathsheba lemelech, and she says, and the king says, what it is it that you'd like? And she says, one request that Adoniyahu has made, and which is what? Vatomer, you ten it Avishag HaShunamit l'Adoniyahu. He wants Adoniyahu, your brother, he wants to marry Avishag. Shlomo's response is exactly on cue. Vayan haMelech Shlomo vayomer leImo, v'lam atshu elat Avishagu shunamit l'Adoniyahu, v'shali lo ta melucha. Why do you request Avishagu shunamit? Why don't you request the entire kingdom for him? Giuachi agadomi, and he's the older brother. He should be in line for the throne. V'lo Avyatar Kohen u'Avyatar u'Yoav ben Tzruya, him together with Avyatar the priest and Yoav ben Tzruya, the three of them, they plotted the whole thing. Bathsheba's stonewalled. She doesn't understand what's going on because Shlomo HaMelech is, in a sense, far more astute in the ways of the kingship and understood exactly what Adoniyahu was doing. So he took, at that moment, he says, done. This request of Adoniyahu has cost him his life. And he takes an oath that he will take care of Adoniyahu the day before the day is out. Ki ayom yumat Adoniyahu. Who does he send to kill Adoniyahu? Vayishlach haMelech Shlomo biyad Benayahu ben Yoyada. He sends Benayahu ben Yoyada in charge of the kreti and the pleti, the special guard. He sends him to take out Adoniyahu vayifga bo vayamot. Avyatar he sends back to Anatot. He exiles him back to his city of Karnim, not a issue for now. And then Vashmua Baal Yoav. And now the story of Yoav comes. Vashmua Baal Yoav ki Yoav natach re Adoniyahu. The Shmua comes to Adoniyahu and to Yoav. And Yoav knew that his life was in danger because ki natach re Adoniyahu v'achrei Avshalom lo natach. Why was Yoav's life in danger? Because he sided with Adoniyahu. And even if he hadn't sided with Avshalom, even if he stayed loyal to David at the time of the rebellion of Avshalom, he did trade loyalties by siding with Adoniyahu. And if Adoniyahu was now considered persona non grata and killed for treason, his life was forfeit too. And therefore, what does he do? Vayanos Yoav el Ol Hashem mechazek b'karnot mizbeach. He runs, he literally takes a page out of Adoniyahu's book. He runs to the mizbeach. He grabs hold of the corners of the altars, the horns of the altar, and he says, I'm safe here. Why is he safe there? It worked for
Adoniyahu.
Worked for Adoniyahu, it worked for him. ויגד למלך שלמה כי נס יואב אלו על השם מהנעז למזבח וישלח שמות בניהו בן יהודה לאמור פגע בו. Shlomo hears where he is, turns to בניהו בן יהודה and says, go strike him there at the מזבח. בניהו בן יהודה is going to walk into the mikdash and kill somebody that like just... So בניהו בן יהודה comes to the tent, comes to the Ohel Hashem, and he says to Yoav, Yomer Elav, Ko'amar HaMelech, say, Yoav, he says, the king commands you to walk out of the temple so that I can kill you. Vayomer, to which Yoav says, Lo, kipamut, if you want to kill me, you do it here, right here, by the Mizbeach. What's he going to do? Comes back, he reports to the king, I told him to leave, and he said, no, if you're going to kill me, you kill me here. Yomala Hamelach. Okay. Asay Kashedibeh. He's said it, not you, do exactly as he said. Strike him there. Ufugabo kvarto. And in so doing, you will remove the scourge of the innocent blood which Yoav shed from my father's house. And return upon him the blood of the two people who he struck that were better and more righteous than he. Who he slew by the sword without my father's knowledge or permission. Two people he killed, Avner ben Ner and Amasa ben Yeter, go and kill him off the Mizbeach. So that's what Benayo ben Yedah does. He goes into the Mikdash and he kills him right there by the Mizbeach. And then they take him out and they bury him. What is going on? And frankly, I'm surprised at this reference in Pasuk Lamed Bet to the reference to Avyatar and Amasa, because Yoav has committed treason. He sided with Adoniyahu. He's guilty of treason. Yet the treason of Yoav siding with Adoniyahu is never mentioned in this story, not here in the context of when Benayahu ben Yehoyada goes into the Mikdash to kill him, and not in David's deathbed when David says to Shlomo, okay, you have to take care of Yoav. Not because he sided with Adoniyahu, but because of what he did to Avner ben Ner and Amasa ben Yeter. But siding with Adoniyahu was treason. And that's not in the context. So what's going on here? So to put the pieces of, there's one piece of the puzzle that's still missing. And the piece of the puzzle that's still missing is the picture of the Ir Miklat and the story of the Ir Miklat. In our minds, we have a picture of the Ir Miklat as a, how does the Ir Miklat work? What's our perception of how the Ir Miklat works? Person kills somebody accidentally, and they know that there is a relative who's going to come after him for the blood that was spilled to Goel Adam. And so what does he do? He runs to the Ir Miklat, and there he's safe, right? More or less, that's how we understand, that's our perception of the Ir Miklat. Truth is not so simple. Because what if he didn't kill him innocently? What if it wasn't an accident? What if it was premeditated? What if it was intentional? What if he committed murder? What if he, in cold-blooded murder, went up to his best friend and shot him went up to his enemy and shot him because he had planned it for months and months and wanted him dead? Excuse me? Wait, we'll get to the Mizbeach in a second. So the two parashiyot of, there's three psukim there, we have to figure out what's referring to what. The two parashiyot of the Ir Miklat are mentioned in Parashat Maaseh and in Parashat Shoftim. So we'll do a quick glance at these two portions and you'll see what the issue is. And in neither portion of the Mizbeach is the Mizbeach mentioned. Pasuk says, this is Dvarim Perek Yetet, this is Parashat Shoftim. You will come into the land that God will give you, and you will conquer it, and you will dwell in the cities. Take three cities, set them aside. These three cities are designated for a particular purpose. Divide the land into three sections, one of these cities in each area. And what's the purpose of these cities? So that every manslayer shall flee there. Rotzeach in modern English is a murderer. In biblical Hebrew means somebody who's committed manslaughter. Intentional or unintentional, that's what it is. Right? Now the question is, what happens to them? So here's the law. This is the case of the manslayer Ashianus Shama Bachai, who shall go to the Ir Miklat and shall live. Meaning running to the Ir Miklat is perceived here as a form of protection. He will be protected. He will live. In a case where, for example, somebody who kills his neighbor unintentionally, didn't hate him in the past. There was no premeditation. There was no intent. There was no, right? It was an accident. For example, somebody in the forest is chopping wood. Famous classic example, right? Chopping wood with an axe. He takes his hands, he thrusts with the axe to cut down the tree, and the head slips off the handle and strikes his neighbor. Classic example of an accident that is not his fault. He should run to one of these cities. That's typically what we refer to as Ratzeach B'Shogeg. Agreed? Now, why does he have to run to one of these cities? Pen Yirdofko El Adam Acharei Ratzeach. Because the avenger of blood is pursuing him. Ki Yecham Levavo, his heart is hot. And if he catches him, he'll kill him. And v'lo emishpat mavet, this person is not worthy of death. Ki lo saneu mid lo mitmosh shom, this act of killing his neighbor was not premeditated. He didn't hate him. It wasn't something which he wanted to do. It was an accident. Aken anochi mitzavcha le'mor shalosh arim tavdilach. So I'm telling you, set aside these three cities. And if your boundaries expand and these three cities aren't enough, so then you'll add more cities. Okay, that's the context of this Ir Miklat. But if in fact a person hates somebody, and he waits in an ambush for him, and he attacks him, and then he dies, he has no right to run to these cities. If he runs to one of these cities, the Ziknei Ro will take him. They will take him outside of the boundaries of the city. They'll hand him over to the Goel Adam, and that'll be the end of it. If you killed somebody, b'mezid, you do not want to run to a Ir Miklat, because you will have no refuge there. Fine. Part one. Everybody clear? So the city of refuge is essentially a protection for the manslayer, right? Person guilty of manslaughter. Protection from the Goel Adam. So far we're good? Okay. Bamid Balamed Hei. Now Bamid Balamed Hei is a slightly larger longer text, but I'll take the key pieces of it. Starting with Pasuk Yud Aleph. Appoint cities that where a person can run if he's committed unwitting manslaughter. Interesting observation. How many Arim Miklat were there? Anybody know? There were three on the eastern side of the Jordan. There were three that were designated on the western side of the Jordan. And then there were?
42 Are Levim.
Correct. An additional 42 Are Levim. All of the cities that were given to the Levim also served as an Ir Miklat. Because essentially you wanted them to be an Ir Miklat, right? You wanted there to be as many as possible so that the Goal, so that the Ratzeach B'Shogeg is a place to run to. If there's only three in the whole country, there's a third of the country to run to, while the Goel Adam is on your case, right? That's not easy. So the entire operation of all of the Arei Levim were also in this category. And so it would be a refuge for the avenger, or from the avenger. The manslayer shall not die. Now listen carefully. Ad omdo lifnei ha'eda lamishpat, until he stands before the congregation in judgment. Skip the designation of the three cities and the six cities for a moment. And ve'im bichli.
Lanus Shama Kol Otseach Koma Kenefesh Bishkaga.
If he strikes him with an instrument of iron, that's an instrument that can kill, then he's a murderer. And a murderer is put to death. It's a capital offense. He can't be protected by the Ir Miklat. If he strikes him with a stone that is capable of causing death, the instrument speaks the story, tells the story. Or with a strike, or with a weapon, or made, even made of wood. If it's a kli, if it's an instrument that is used to premeditatedly to kill, he's a vatzeach. It's not going to help him. Gol adam yamit et haratzeach. Gol adam will find him and put him to death. Ve'im besinaye dafenu, if he thrust him out of hatred, or ishlich lav bitztia, or he hurled at him lying in wait, ve'yamot, or be'eva, or in enmity, ve'yamot, in all of these cases, mot yumat haratzeach. Vatzeachu. Whereas in befeta beloiva dafo, but if he thrusts him without enmity, or he hurls something at him without lying in wait, or he has a stone or an instrument that doesn't have the capability of causing death, meaning that it was an accident, he doesn't see him as an enemy. He wasn't seeking his harm. Then what happens? V'shoftu ha'eda ben ha'makeh uben goel adam al mishpatim ha'el. Then the congregation shall judge. Meaning, v'itzilu ha'eda t'rotzeach, and then the congregation will will protect the manslayer from judgment, from the goel adam. Meaning, this phrase, v'itzilu ha'eda, v'shoftu ha'eda, v'itzilu ha'eda. Right, the congregation will judge. The congregation will save. This phrase, the beginning of Masechet Makot and Sanhedrin, is the foundation of the court system of capital courts that were authorized to judge capital offenses, made up of 23 judges. 10 an eida minimally is 10 shaftu eida v'tzilu eida, 10. To accuse, 10 to defend, 3 in the additional court, etc. All kinds of legal issues in the Mishnah. But you understand what happens to the Goel Adam when he comes to the to a city of refuge. What's the process? He comes to this Ir Miklat. What's the first thing that happens to him?
Put him on trial.
He goes on trial.
Decide, does he qualify?
Correct. He has to go on trial. This is what we keep missing. Every time we talk about the Ir Miklat, we think of the Ir Miklat as the kind of this boundary, where the moment he crosses over the boundary, he's safe. Extraterritorial. The Ir Miklat is extraterritorial. You can't get me here. Nah, 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 I'm safe. It's not that simple. He has to stand before the court. And every one of these Ir Miklats had its own court. That's the Zikne Ha'ir. Or in this case, the Shvishaftu Eida V'Tzilu Eida, the Eida is the court. The court stood in that city. And he would have to come and he would stand before the court and there would be a trial. And if he would be found to be guilty of premeditated murder, then he would be handed over to the Goel Adam or the courts or whatever it is. Then they would deal with him. If he was found to be Wetzech B'Shogeg, let him stay in the Ir Miklat until, for how long?
Then dies. The Kohen Gadol
dies. Here the reference is Ad Mot Kohen Gadol. He serves a life sentence, just not his life, life sentence of the Kohen Gadol. Why? A whole different conversation. Why the Kohen Gadol? But he's not that. An Ir Miklat, understand the context of an Ir Miklat. The Gemara refers to an Ir Miklat as an exile. Golel Ir Miklat. The person is exiled to an Ir Miklat. It's not that he just did nothing wrong and he needs protection. He has done something wrong, because if he's done nothing wrong, meaning if it's purely accidental and it's totally out of his hands, he doesn't have to go anywhere. Accidental death does not have to go to an Ir Miklat. Negligence causing death goes to an Ir Miklat. That's the technical definition. has to be some element of negligence. Premeditated murder, he gets committed as he's guilty of a crime. And how do you determine between them? We have a court system. Shaftu eda v'tzilu eda. What happens in a court system? What happens in a trial? Now, we've all seen trials, whether in real life or on television. What happens in a trial?
Each side presents its case.
Each side presents its case. You prosecuting attorneys, you have defense attorneys, you have attorney for the attorney for the
witness.
Right? You have witnesses, principle of lelamed zchut, we go, and a capital offense, we go out of our way to try to mitigate in some way to find the loophole so that we don't have to execute, we don't want to execute people. And so capital punishment is very rarely applied because we want as much as possible for there to be a benefit of the doubt given to every defendant. Agreed? Benefit of the doubt given to every defendant. So essentially we have two types of people. We have a court, v'ashavtu eda v'tzilu eda, we have a court case, and we have two types of people. Makeh rotzeach, rotzeach b'shogeg, rotzeach b'mezid. Rotzeach b'shogeg, if he's determined to be not guilty of premeditated murder, he stays in the amiklat. Rotzeach b'mezid, he gets dealt with the gol adam. So far? So good. Except that there's a third category. The third category is not on the halacha, but it really is in the pshat of the pasuk. Because there's a third category, which the Torah considers far worse than all of the above. Meaning, in all of the references to the Ir Miklat, whether you go to the Ir Miklat or you don't stay in the Ir Miklat, the concept is either because he was rotzeach b'shogeg, meaning he didn't hate him in advance, he didn't lie in wait for him, he didn't, or rotzeach b'mezid. How does it describe rotzeach b'mezid? He hated him, with enmity struck him, right? It's just confrontation between two people. They shot each, they had a what to call a shootout?
A duel.
Right. A duel. There's another kind of circumstance altogether. Which, and at least not in the halachic context of it, but at least in the pshat of it, doesn't even get to the v'shaftu ha'eda, v'tzilu ha'eda, to the world of the Beit Din, to the world of the court. And that is where we started. A person who strikes somebody else to the point where he dies, that's a capital offense. We put to death. We call that, what have we called that up until now? What's the category?
Premeditated
murder. Premeditated murder. Okay? Category two. If he did not act with premeditation. Right? Previous case was premeditated. This is not premeditated. I'll give you a place to flee. So I have premeditated murder and I have manslaughter. So far, you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Now I have a third category. Third category is lehargo b'orma, with cunning, with guile, with deceit. Not somebody who confronts somebody like a brute who stands up there and he says, I hate you, I'm going to kill you. This is with guile, with cunning, with deceit. B'orma. From the perspective of the Torah, that's a third category because it's so evil. It's so belittling. It's so low. It's considered such an offense that you're not even going to let him go to the refuge. You're going to take him off the mizbeach. He's not even going to get to the courts. The case of Me'imis Bechit Tikachel Lamut is somebody who comes running to the Mizbeach because he's killed somebody be'orma. Then you're going to take him off the Mizbeach. The halacha interpretation of this verse is referring to a Kohen who commits murder, etc. But the pshat of it is they're referring to someone who commits murder in guile, be'orma. Then even from the Mizbeach, you will take him. He does not have the protection even of the Ir Miklat. Even for the initial court hearing, he doesn't have that protection. The king will take him off. When Adoniyahu runs to the Mizbeach, Adoniyahu runs to the Mizbeach because Adoniyahu, not Yoav. When Adoniyahu ran to the Mizbeach in Perek Aleph, he ran to the Mizbeach because
he committed treason.
He committed treason. He started a rebellion. Treason is tantamount to Make Ish Vemet Mot Yumat. It's a capital offense. And so the king says, I can't touch you on the Mizbeach. You're in your Miklat. Come before the king. Stand in judgment. Stand in court. The king is a court. The king has the jurisdiction of the court. Daniel comes before the court. And Shlomo Melech spares his life for a time period. Then comes Yoav. And Yoav runs the Mizbeach in Perek Bet. And Yoav, in Yoav's mind, it worked for Adoniyahu, it's going to work for me. Because in Adoniyahu's mind, in Yoav's mind, what's he guilty of? Now let's put the story back together. To Yoav, what's he guilty of? Why is Shlomo pursuing him?
For treason.
Treason,
because he sided with Adoniyahu. For treason, Adoniyahu ran to the Mizbeach. Yoav runs to the Mizbeach. Mizbeach kolet. I'll stand before the court. The court will hear me out. Shlomo sends in Yabaneyahu ben Yoyada with the guns ready to shoot. Safety off. And Yoav says to him, you want to kill me? Kill me here by the Mizbeach. You can't do that, right? Right? Because I'm at the Mizbeach. I'm in the Ir Miklat. You can't kill me here. What does David say? What does Shlomo say to him? Vayomelo HaMelech, Asei Kasher Diberuch Pagabo. Why can you kill him there? Ve'eshiv Hashem et tamo ha-mosho ha-shepaga b'shnei anashim tzadikim v'tovim mimenu ve'yargeim b'chere ve'avi lo yada. I'm not holding him accountable for the treason of Adoniyahu. That parsha's done. I am holding accountable for the murder of Avner ben Ner and Amasa ben Yeter, who he killed in guile, who he killed be'orma, who he killed by embracing them, bringing them close, embracing them in a kiss, and then stabbing them in the back. Who he embraced in the case of Avner ben Ner by pretending to be his friend, by telling him he's got state secrets to share with him, a message from David HaMelech, brought him into the alleyway, and then stabbed him in the back. That's the classic example that was considered so evil, for which even the Mizbeach is not kolet me'im Mizbechit tekachen alamut. So I come back to the story, it's a very dark story, but I come back to the story of David at the moment, and the story of Yoav, when Yoav takes Amasa and brings him close, and they tend to kiss him, and he grabs his beard, and he draws him into his bosom, and he says to him, oh, my friend, and then he kills him. Since the Torah looks at that, the category here is much, much worse than even a case of Otzeach B'mezid. That's Otzeach B'mezid L'orgo B'mezid Yishveu L'orgo B'orma. And for that, David says, that's unforgivable. And so even from the Mizbeach, he takes him to be held accountable. And that's where the story of Yoav ends. Yoav is, in the end, is not punished for the siding with the rebellion of Adoniyahu, and he's not held accountable for the death of Avshalom. Those were excusable, those were understandable. he is held accountable for the two murders he committed that were premeditated, that were extrajudicial, that had no jurisdiction, that had no justification, and that were committed out of vengeance, threat for his own position. As the head of the general of the army, Yoav has done many things that the average person does not need to know about, or would never want to know about. And for that, for none of that is he held accountable. He's the head of the army. He has to do things that other people don't want to do. I shouldn't have to do. But there's a limit. And even the head of the army, even the Sar Tzava of David's army, David knows that if he commits an act which is considered treasonous and evil and illegal and commits cold-blooded murder against Amasa ben Yeter and Avner ben Ner, be'orma, for that he's accountable to the end of his life. So David can't hold him accountable, that we've talked about for many reasons. So he hands that over to Shlomo, and the moment Shlomo has him in a context in which his position is compromised, he's held accountable even for the two deaths during the time of his father, and dafka for them and not for anything else. So that's the story of Yoav. And unfortunately, he does not live to tell the tale, but Navi tells the tale for us. All right. Questions?
Is there a chovah on the Goel Hadam to run after the Rutzeach?
Well, Hadam is an interesting question. I suspect not, although there are some who suggest that there is such an obligation. I suspect the Goel Adam is the Torah's way of describing that which will, today the Goel Adam is replaced by a system of law and order called the police force. If you didn't have a police force, then the Goel Adam kind of plays that role. But the police play exactly the same role as in today's society as the Goel Adam played in the world of Tanakh. If somebody commits murder, the police will catch them. Police will bring them to justice. If the Goel Adam catches them, theoretically, the Goel Adam was somebody who was involved as Noger Badavar, right? He's the relative, so he can exact justice before he gets to the court, but that's complicated. But the idea of the Goel Adam is to push the Rotzeach to the Ir Miklat so he can stand trial. That's really the context in which that role in the Torah plays out. Okay, questions? All right, so here's the deal. I'm going to stop recording. We've officially ended today.